Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever and whenever you may be listening to us. This is the Tarot Insider Show here on the Psychic Talk Radio Network. I'm Dax Carlisle, coming to you live from Tucson, Arizona. I am the founder and executive producer of Psychic Talk, also the founder of the Tarot Guild. 14 years now, folks. Wow. We're getting old. Oh, my God. I'm also the co-founder of the International Association of Angel Practitioners. And my co-host on Tarot Insider is Suzanne Warnett. Suzanne is making the move from the United States back to the UK, and they're there now. Their stuff is getting to them, but they have to unpack and get settled in, and hopefully Suzanne will be back, I'm hoping in May. But meanwhile, I got some fabulous guest co-hosts that are helping me out with the show. Mary Brown was just on with me. She's going to be back next week. We're going to talk about tarot and timing. But this week, I'm lucky to have the fabulous Janet Boyer. And we have an interesting topic to chat about. Plus, we're a live call-in show. So give us a call at 714-816-4628. You can chat about our topic. You can ask us questions about tarot and numerology. Or you can call in for a mini reading. That's right. So the topic today, should tarot be in the hands of the masses? What? I know. But we're going to talk about that. Should tarot be in the hands of the masses? Is it the dumbing down of tarot? That's right. So Janet is a very well-known reviewer, author, prolific author and writer, of course. She's coming out with a new book, Naked Tarot. I think about September, we're going to get some details from her today. She also launched a podcast called Naked Tarot, which is available on the Psychic Talk Radio Network over there at psychictalk.net. That's right. And if you're listening to us live, join us in the chat room. psychictalk.net/chat will take you to the chat post on Facebook. If you're not a member of the group yet, just scroll up and join our free group there. Then you'll be able to comment on the post. That's how you chat with us during the show live. Otherwise, give us a call, 714-816-4628. Certified Tarot Master Janet Boyer. And let's see if we can bring her on here. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Dax. How are you?
Oh, great. I'm drinking copious amounts of coffee here, because I'm just so excited about this topic and getting, you know, raring to go here. And
that's what I'm doing. I just got my second cup, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, just what Dax and I need, caffeine to throw some fuel on the fire.
Like we can't talk anyway.
Right. So what do you think about this topic, Dax?
Well, you know, you mentioned it to me and asked me if I wanted to do this topic, and I'm like, what? And then you told me how you had heard people talking about it and heard a podcast, not a podcast, I'm sorry, a YouTuber. And I was like, okay, let's talk about that. You know, it's kind of like a lot of things out there. You know, everything's available on the internet, right? So the concept of, in this day and age, anything not being in the hands of the masses is virtually impossible. Everything is in the hands of the masses. And that can be a good thing. You know, originally when we were going to do this topic, and I was chatting with you a day or two ago, I said, I'll take the devil's advocate position. I will talk to you. You can do your position, and I'll do the devil's advocate and say, well, you know, maybe it shouldn't be in the hands of the masses. You know, I personally feel that the tarot does hold secrets, and that the secret of the tarot is not so much predicting the future, but creating it. I believe in the power of creation, the power of manifestation is in the tarot from my studies and my use of it and so forth like that. And, you know, maybe that's where some of this stems from. Maybe they don't want this in the hands of everyone. They don't want everybody knowing that they can use the tarot in different ways, for instance, you know. So, you know, I was actually, like, okay, I'll take – oh, I was just – let me finish up real quick.
Okay.
Let me finish up real quick. So I was going to take the devil's advocate position, but then I listened to your podcast yesterday, which is kind of like a precursor to the show, you know. And I'm listening to that, and I'm like, oh, God, I don't think I can actually do the devil's advocate position. In fact, after listening to your podcast, I'm thinking to myself, you know, everybody should be born and immediately issued a deck of cards.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mention about using tarot consciously. See, you and I come to tarot as outsiders. And see, we were the masses at one time. You know, you
yes,
and I,
we are.
I mean, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not sure about you, but I don't think so. You weren't indoctrinated with esoterica, right, and taught by someone like Golden Dawn, were you?
I never joined Golden Dawn or the multitude of other organizations that are out there. I did come to tarot a roundabout way, a little bit different than the average tarot person. The average tarot person kind of, I mean, this is the way I envision it because it didn't happen to me, but the way I envision it is, you know, they hear about tarot, someone talks about it, or they see it on TV or in the movies or whatever. They go out to their Barnes and Noble. Oh, sorry, those don't exist anymore. Okay, they go to Amazon and they buy some tarot books and they start looking at them. Well, you know, I've been interested in these topics since my early teens. So I started studying sacred geometry and numerology, and simultaneously, of course, I'm in school, I'm in high school, I'm in college, I'm studying quantum physics, I'm studying algebra, I'm studying all these trigonometry and a lot of different sciences. But then at the same time, I have this curiosity about the paranormal. And I'm starting to see the connections. I'm seeing the connections between what they call the hard sciences with astrology, numerology, and sacred geometry. And, you know, this goes on for a long time. And numerology, sacred geometry leads me to numerology. That's a huge study right there, and I get really into that. And then that led to tarot. And then I started studying tarot, you know. So I did have some kind of a basis, but it wasn't esotericism.
Exactly. So you were the masses. Now, see, the
Absolutely.
Same way with me. When I first I actually heard a voice. I've told this before, and, you know, inside, a still small voice. Ron and I were at the dining room table. He still remembers it. So do I. I had just got done studying personality systems intensively for about 10 years. I go through like these 10-year cycles, and I just felt to learn tarot. I heard a voice say, learn tarot. And I looked at him, and I said, I just heard a voice saying, learn tarot. And he looks at me and goes, oh, okay. And, you know, he's kind of used to this woo-woo thing where I'm directed, you know, by a cosmic download. So back then, oh my God, this was probably 15 years ago or more, there was hardly anything about tarot online, and what was on was all the Thoth deck. And I'm like, this makes no sense to me. What are these weird-ass pictures, you know? They don't relate to my life at all. And then, they don't. And then the couple of the books that were recommended I got, oh my God, so dry, I could never get through the first few pages. And I still don't know how this one book is always recommended. It just sucks so bad. But anyway, none of it would fit. And yet I knew in my heart I was supposed to learn it. So what do you do? You know, what do you do if you look at books, they make no sense to you, and yet there's something compelling about the images, and you know you're being directed to learn it. And I felt to get the inner child cards was my first deck, which is actually more complex than it seems. It's like, oh, based on fairy tales, but actually it's very psychological and perennial wisdom type of thing with Isha Lerner. And so how I did it is I learned tarot through my bit method. My back in time tarot, the subject of my first book, is actually a method I used to learn tarot organically. And what I did is I used memories, fairy tales, movies, songs, poems, things like that, conversations I had, news items, and I'd ask myself, and I'd break it down and say, okay, what card in the tarot looks like it would match up with that? So I kind of learned tarot backwards. And also, by being exposed to the archetypes, I've also, you know, my minor was in English literature, and my other minor was psychology, and my major was theology. And I started seeing, you know, patterns. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, this tarot card relates really well to this parable in the Bible, or this pattern in literature. Or, you know, you could see it everywhere. The images and the archetypes displayed in tarot are universal. You know, they span time, they span ethnicity, they span culture. And so, excuse me, I started to connect these things, and I started to build, you know, as I said on the part one of the podcast, tarot is structure, it's bones. You know, it's your major arcana, minor arcana, and your core cards. And I started putting, like clay on these bones, my the information that I have, you know, gleaned from my formal studies and informal. I've always been a voracious learner, you know, whether it's from theology, different spiritual traditions, literature, psychology, you know, Jungian thought, all of those, and I started to apply it, and I started to, you know, putting a lot of skin and bones and nerves and things to the structure we call tarot. And, you know, I didn't get into the esotericism until probably 7 years later or more. And then I started to, you know, just pick up on it and see, okay, what's all this about? Does it have any, does it hold any, you know, relevance to me? And most of it actually doesn't. You know, I have a lot of really good tarot decks, like, you know, Histories of the Tarot and Mystic Origins of the Tarot and things like that. And quite frankly, you know, a lot of the traditional meanings of decks, whether it's Italia or you know, Golden Dawn or whatever, which sometimes contradicts because, you know, Waite wanted to rectify the tarot and all this. And, you know, a lot of them are just not relevant to modern living. It sounds very Victorian, you know, very old-fashioned, you know, same way with the court cards. I mean, heck, we don't have any, you know, knights going around, but we have knight energy, and it's been transformed and updated, you know, into like warriors and what have you, which, again, are shown in movies and things like that. So pop culture is replete with all these, you know, symbols and archetypes. So, you know, I connect that to pop culture as well. And so I think those of us who are outsiders, meaning those of us who come with a wealth of information that is not esoteric, that is not Freemasonry, that is not Western Hermeticism, which is not even, you know, Wiccan or anything, but we bring all these other disciplines to it, you know, we stir up and we bring some life to it and we help expand it and we bring more to the table of what is tarot. You know, because like I said in my podcast in part one, you know, it's like the Red Sea versus the Dead Sea. You know, the Dead Sea is dead because there's only one channel of water going through. If you only have esoterica and you try to protect it, well, guess what? It's dead. It's only relevant for those people who are elite, who want to act like they're special, and, you know, they do their secret handshakes and their secret Abrelman oils and all that, and it makes them feel special. It's just ridiculous, you know? And but when you have the Red Sea and you have water going in and out, then stuff gets swished around. There's life, you know, there's energy and other disciplines and things that complement tarot structure and the universal archetypes and symbols that are already there.
Exactly, you know, and what I said earlier about, you know, the typical way and how sounds like both of us came at the tarot slightly backwards. you know, I imagine, you know, the masses, they pick up some books, they pick up some decks, they study. After a while, they may go a little deeper. They start studying the elements. They study numerology. If they go really deep, it might lead to sacred geometry. And, you know, if you flip that around, that's how I ended up at tarot at the end instead of at the beginning. So sacred geometry, which you learn the Platonic solids, which are the elements, you learn numerology. And then I started studying tarot and I'm like, oh, okay, this is obviously a geometric elemental numerological system, you know, and it made perfect sense to me from the get-go. You know, that's why my tarot course is called Tarot by the Numbers, because I break up the deck numerologically. I teach simultaneously numerology and tarot and some sacred geometry just to give people a foundation, you know. So I came at it from, I think, the opposite of what the average person does, you know. But
And that's so fascinating that tarot is so universal. Look how you came from it with sacred geometry and numerology. Here I am coming from it from Christian mysticism and literature and psychology, and other people are bringing their disciplines. And I think to myself, if you've got a tool that is so universal that each of us can recognize the bones and say, oh, my God, this, you know, then don't you think that it does belong in the hands of the masses?
Yeah, and you know, you the thing is, it already is. I mean, it's almost a completely moot point to even be contemplating it. How do you reel it back in and just have it for the esotericists? I mean,
right.
Let's take a look at it real quickly. So you mentioned in your first podcast there yesterday about the YouTuber saying something along the lines of, you know, it shouldn't be allowed to get into the hands of the corporations. It's going to be destroyed. It's already in the hands of the capitalists, folks. I mean, what do you think the giant publishers are?
That's why I was shaking my head. I was like, dude, you're talking about the Rider-Waite and wonderful Pamela Coleman Smith, and we need to preserve, you know, her work and, you know, the learning and intention she had and not have it in the hands of corporations. I'm thinking, honey, what do you think U.S. Games is? Do you really think that they're there? That they care about your spiritual health? That they care about your personal growth? They're there to make money, and that's why they threaten to sue anybody that dares use the images of the Rider-Waite.
And that's why only certain types of decks and certain types of books really get pushed, because those are the ones that are going to be mass produced and mass consumed, because it fits a certain mold. And that's why we've had in recent years this breakout of independent I got a motorcycle going by. We had this breakout of independent, you know, indie decks and books coming out, because the mass, you know, the industrialists, so to speak, the corporations, they wouldn't publish this because they can't sell 6 billion copies of it, you know. And it's not just the tarot corporations. I mean, I wrote an article earlier about tarot going mainstream, and Christian Dior used the Mother Peace images in his recent line of clothing, you know, which I think is great, because, you know, that publicizes, gets the tarot into the hands of the masses. I'm thinking the exact opposite, that this is what people really need, because think about it. So many people are in a spiritual dead zone right now, because traditional spirituality, which is actually religion, you know, structured religion, is not working for them. And so they're seeking. And if they learn tarot, which, you know, there was a famous Kabbalist that said that tarot is just a way to talk to God, you know, then it's a Gnostic system. You know, you're able to have a direct experience of the divine by studying and using tarot, you know, and I think it's a great spiritual path.
Great point. That's what Gnosticism means, direct spiritual knowledge.
Exactly, and I think more people should be studying and using the tarot. And there's always going to be a subgroup of people, for their own personal reasons, that want to keep it to themselves. So we've talked about, you know, the corporations, that level. We've talked about the esotericists, you know, and people that want to keep the hidden knowledge hidden and things along those lines. There's also another aspect, which is the professional tarot readers. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm technically a professional tarot reader and numerologist, you know, but there's a lot of people that label themselves readers or psychics out there. And their whole backstory is this thing about, well, you know, you're born a psychic, and only people that come from a family line of psychics and mediums, you know, can actually do this work or should actually be doing this work. But what they're really trying to do is saying, oh, you know, I don't want you doing this too because you're taking away my clients. And so there's another angle. Yeah, there's another angle to it.
You know, I think, and this might sound reductionist, but, you know, Ron and I talk about this every once in a while. I really think that everything in life can be reduced down to the seven chakras of the different lenses of how people see things and how they operate. You go below the fourth chakra, the heart chakra, and you start slumming. It's not that the third, second, and first chakras are not important. No, those are our roots. Those are our bases. That is, you know, our connection to family and tribe. It's our creativity and ability to produce things and create sexual energy. And then, of course, the third chakra is self-esteem and sense of ego and sense of self and individuality. So those are important. But when people start slumming in those lower chakras and start, you know, you can almost tell what chakra orientation a person's coming from just by hearing their language. And this YouTuber was talking a whole lot about capitalism, corporations, you know, money, money, money. And to me, when you start talking like that, you're fear-based and you're in the lower chakras and you're fearing something. You're either fearing that you're not going to be seen as special anymore. There's the third chakra, the threat to the individualism, the specialness, the self-esteem and confidence. Or you're afraid that money isn't going to be coming to you because other people might end up writing books or, you know, becoming a professional tarot reader. Then you threaten the second chakra of money. And is there enough for me, and the scarcity mindset. And then there's, you know, then there's the tribal identity, you know, the first chakra. You know, if everybody's called a tarot reader, then again, you know, you're not that specialness. And it talks about, let me quote this. And he actually calls about saying tarot needs to be in the hands of the tarot community. He kept talking about community. Again, that's first chakra, you know, tribal shit. That's why people love to go to football games. Rah, 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 my team, my badge, my teacher, my guru, my, you know, patron, my little tarot organization that gave me an award, you know, because I kissed their ass. You know, that's all tribalism. It's all first chakra, you know, ooh, I belong to this group, and I won this award and what have you. And this tarot community, and I'm thinking to myself, who the hell's a tarot community? You know, there was no concept of a tarot community until social media. And how do you define that? Do you define that as everybody who's interested in tarot, everybody who reads tarot, or you define it as your little group that you're in Facebook that, you know, will only allow certain people, the yes men? You know, it's just ridiculous. And this is a direct quote from the video. Okay, and after I read this, I'm going to read what a definition of fascism. And I think you're going to find this very interesting. This is a direct quote from the video. Tarot should be in the hands of the tarot community, not given to a corporation or someone not of the tarot. You know, tarot people taking ownership of tarot. There's other people, they've co-opted it, who know nothing about it. So, in other words, this person is talking about tarot should be in the hands of the tarot community, not someone who is not of the tarot, whatever the hell that means. Now, this is the definition of fat. Yeah, this is the definition. Yeah, who's not of the, you know, someone who's not of the tarot. I mean, at what point do you become of the tarot? You know, when you get a certain seal of approval for someone, when you've got enough books on your shelf, you know, books don't mean shit. You know, you can have 100 tarot books and still, you know, not be grown as a person and still be swimming in the lower chakras and still, you know, ignorant as ever. But anyway, here's a definition of fascism. Fascism is a formal, radical, authoritarian nationalism or tribalism characterized by dictatorial power, forcible suppression of opposition, and control of industry and commerce. Isn't that interesting? I mean, this person is sitting there asserting that terror should be in the hands of people who are of the tarot and tarot community, you know. So I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's just kind of scary language there. And I'm like, are you really that small-minded, you know? What are your thoughts?
It's interesting because I can think of certain individuals and certain organizations that adopt that exact philosophy almost to the T. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. The part about in your definition of fascism there.
Dictatorial,
you know,
power.
Control over the distribution,
yeah.
The suppression
forcible
of opposition.
Yeah, forcible suppression of opposition.
Folks, if you're new to tarot and the quote-unquote tarot community, whatever that is, you don't know the backstory that we've dealt with for 25 years, you know, and especially the last, I'd say, 10 years, where individuals and organizations have tried to, you know, suppress anybody and anything that, you know, produced or espoused anything in opposition to, you know, these individuals and groups, and they, you know, actively seek to suppress these other people.
Sometimes
and other groups.
To the point of blackballing or boycotting.
Yeah, or threats of litigation, and I mean, you name it, I mean, you know. And so, you know, these people that are supposed to be quote unquote spiritual, and then they act like this. But to wind it back or come full circle back to the original premise of, you know, should tarot be in the hands of the masses? You know, well, tarot is evolving. It's becoming something completely different. It's not the ancient tarot anymore. It's not even the tarot of a little over 100 years ago when the first Waite-Smith deck came out. In fact, when I started in tarot, there was only about 3 decks or so in publication. Now there's thousands, and they have gone in different directions. And I think that's what everything – it doesn't matter if you're talking about tarot or talking about, you know, some other – product or industry, or everything needs to progress and evolve. Otherwise it dies. You know,
exactly.
if there wasn't the internet, if there wasn't the massive explosion since the 60s of new tarot decks and books and now, you know, all this that's available through the internet, tarot would have died a long time ago, folks, a long, long time ago. And innovation, you know, I want to see new ways to use the tarot, not just the old, you know, it keeps getting regurgitated, the gypsy fortune teller, you know, version of what the tarot is supposed to be. What about using it, you know, in more guided meditations and hypnotarot? How about tarot as a basis for hypnotherapy? I'm a hypnotherapist. How about tarot and energy healing? How about tarot and the tarot symbology as Reiki symbols, as an example? You know, how about new ways to read tarot if you're going to go down the route of reading and using it as an oracle? How about, you know, new types of, and I'm not talking about just, you know, new decks. We endlessly have new decks because you can have as many new decks as you have artists to create new imagery, right? But what about decks that don't look anything like the decks we're used to, that create a completely different system? Frankly, I've been working on that since 2004, and you know, people have been beating down my door. Are you going to get this deck out? You know, that I have on the back burner, which unfortunately I can't go much into because it's, you know, proprietary. But it's the tarot. It is the tarot. It uses the tarot, but it's completely different, you know.
Yeah, just like the Osho Zen. The Osho Zen is completely different, and yet it is one of the most beautiful, thought-provoking tarots on the market. And, you know, but it's not Rider Waite, even though it has a book that will correlate the cards to Rider Waite if people are curious. But it's a very deep, very spiritual, very psychological deck. And, you know, I know of a guy who's, you know, new to tarot, and that's his first deck he felt to bond with. And he gets the most amazing readings out of that deck. And he's very insightful. And I just couldn't believe that he's new to tarot. And, you know, he constantly sees people, you know, pushing the Rider Waite and the Rider Waite symbolism. And he goes, am I using the wrong deck? He goes, I just feel like I'm out of the mix. And I'm like, no. Just because of that's, you know, what a lot of people use doesn't mean that you have to use it. If you're having success with the cards and it's empowering you and it's enabling, you know, some greater insights about you and the world, you stay with that. Don't go, you know, don't fall into the peer pressure of what a one true tarot is. I mean, it's, you know, just like the analogy of the Bible. I mean, there are some people that swear the King James version of the Bible is the one true Bible. And I knew this, you know, even when I was a Christian minister. There was this person, this family that owned this bookstore, and they would push the fact that the King James is the only true Bible. And I'm thinking, honey, the only true Bible was the one that was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic. And unless you can read that, you're not reading the one true Bible. And, you know, and I'm seeing the same kind of dogmatism in the online tarot world that, you know, surrounded, you know, the Bible being disseminated to the masses. You know, if you could read the Bible in the Hebrew and the Greek, and so, you know, they started translating the Old Testament into Greek hundreds of years before even Jesus lived on earth. They were going to, it was known as the Greek Septuagint. And then, you know, about 700 years later, Jerome made his translation known as the Vulgate, and that was Latin, you know, and it was the common tongue of the Roman Empire at the time. But then when Latin began to fade, only the well-educated, you know, maintained familiarity with Latin. And, you know, then the Catholic Church resisted efforts, you know, to translate the Bible in other languages. And then, you know, next thing you know, people were getting opposition, you know, with translations, you know, Martin Luther, the Reformation, the whole nine yards. And people were actually, you know, being persecuted and burned at the stake if they had a copy of the Bible in their hands. They wanted the Bible, you know, the Latin Bible, that's why they wanted the Latin Mass, to only be understood by the few, the secret language of Latin that only,
exactly,
you know, the wealthy could understand. And whenever you have something in the hands of a few, it's a power deal. Because, you know, if you can control the dissemination of knowledge, then you control what the people think, propaganda, and you control the perceptions. If you control the perceptions, you control their actions. And so they didn't want, you know, the Latin Vulgate to be further translated into German and other lay languages that the masses could have, because then they could discover these profound spiritual truths embedded in the Bible for themselves. And then that means that they wouldn't need the mediator anymore. They wouldn't need the priest. They wouldn't need the ministers. They wouldn't need the church, because guess what? Then they could have a direct relationship with God and have spiritual growth on their own apart from the church. And that means, mm-hmm, the church wouldn't get the money then. The church wouldn't have the power and the control and the influence. And so when I hear people say, oh, you know, we don't want to have something to get in the hands of the masses, I immediately think control. You know, they want control,
yes,
and power for some reason.
Yeah, and, you know, the original Christians, a large subsection of the original Christians were the Gnostics, and they believed in this. They believed in,
yes,
the direct experience of the divine, and they were suppressed and eradicated because the other factions were building a hierarchy, and they wanted to retain
their
power.
Their gospels were removed. Yeah, their gospels were removed. The Council of Nicene, you know, they wouldn't accept the Gospel,
exactly,
of Thomas and the Gospel and all those Gnostic Gospels, Gospel of Mary Magdalene, all those, they, when it came time to choose which, you know, which books got into the canon, the Gnostic ones that mentioned maybe reincarnation and direct knowledge and some really cool esoteric secrets, oh, they weren't even included in the Bible, and yet they,
mm-hmm,
were written contemporaneously. They were just as legitimate as the ones that made it into canon, but no, the powers that be, again, you know, redacted those scriptures that could free the masses and, you know, require less dependence,
yeah,
on some kind of shepherd or mediator.
Because I think Jesus' message was a whole lot different than what it's been watered down to today.
Oh,
so
my
actually
God,
the
it is.
actually the opposite has happened. It's so interesting from, you know, what was being espoused on YouTube about watering it down. You know, it's really the other way around. I want to mention we're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to tell you some of the upcoming shows on Psychic Talk, psychictalk.net, on Psychic Talk Radio. Also, we're going to go to phone calls in just a second here. So if you've been listening to the show and hopefully enjoying, we're going to take your calls at 714-816-4628. One last thing, though, Janet, just to come full circle. So what is the point of tarot then?
Well, that's the thing. You know, I feel tarot is a tool. And it's not an entity that gets offended. And it's only as big or as small as the user. Just like scriptures, you know, just like the New Testament. You know, so many people have been hurt by the, you know, Christian church, including me. But I've come around now to more mystical understanding. And you just want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Say, oh, all of the New Testament sucks. It's misogynist. It's this, it's this. Until you really get into it and you understand it. But when you've been hurt, you know, you just kind of want to throw it out. Well, you know, I feel like tarot is the same way. You get out of it according to what you bring to it and what your perspectives are. And it's a tool. And it shrinks or it expands according to whatever you bring to it. You know, you bring just esotericism to it, you got a little sliver. You know, you bring other disciplines, you know, you expand it. You know, there is, of course, intuition and direct knowledge. So I think, it, you know, tarot is just a tool. And it's not spiritual by itself. You know, and this has really disillusioned a lot of people, too. They think tarot is a spiritual tool. And like you were saying earlier about your observations with Dior and the fashion, how so many people are seekers right now. They are thirsting for a spiritual experience or something, a connection beyond themselves. And, you know, when they come across tarot and they see pictures that look like, you know, a hierophant who's in a church and what have you, and some of the Christian symbolism of the Rider-Waite, they think tarot is a spiritual tool. And it is, and it can be, but not on its own. It's just a pack of cards. And like the Bible, you can either use that scripture, you know, where it says, you know, how like the Bible's like a two-edged sword. You can either use that, the Word of God or scripture, sacred scriptures, to cut people and to judge them and to put them in a box and to limit them and to curtail them, curtail their, you know, their free expression, you know, curtail their actions and the way they think. Or you can use that same sword to free people and cut the bonds and the shackles of limitation. I feel like tarot is the same way. And I think people get disillusioned. They think tarot is a spiritual tool. And then they see a lot of tarot people acting like assholes, you know, territorial, they're on the right tarot, people saying, I don't like the direction tarot is going, whatever the hell that means. And they see the pissing contests, the cruelty, the same things that a lot of people have seen in Christian church. And they're like, oh, hell no, you know, I don't want another religion. Because it's turning into a dogmatism that's as bad as fundamentalism. It is fundamentalism. It's tarot fundamentalism. So, you know, I think tarot is a tool, and it can be anything you want it to be. I mean, it could be a brainstorming tool. It could be a tool to access greater communication between people. It could be to create novel plots and poetry and songs. You and I are big on using it as conscious creation. That's why I wrote the e-book, Affect Your Reality with Tarot Cards. Hardly anybody uses a tarot consciously where you look at, you know, you look at it face up and use it to, you know, manifest things and to use affirmations or what have you. So I think tarot is a tool. And, you know, it's only as big or as small as the user.
Absolutely. Okay, so real quick, folks, what's coming up on Psychic Talk tomorrow, Thursday, April 12th? Hosts Sue Schumacher and Anna Nola, they discuss how does soul realignment help me. So you're going to learn a little bit about soul realignment, the Akashic Records, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. On Friday the 13th, that's right, Friday the 13th, an introduction to Sanskrit mantras, what are they, with Shakti Devi. And I'll be guest co-hosting with her. Her host, Naki, is at a goddess-centered retreat, and she'll be calling in for a quick report on that. And that's an evening show, folks, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. Psychic Saturdays, I'm joined by guest co-host Mary Brown, and it's open lines. We'll be taking your calls and readings all show long, and that's going to be 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And then Sunday, April 15th, Caressing Your Soul with Natalie Anderson. And she's going to be talking about healing your pets and you and taking your calls. So bring your pets with you as well. And it's 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on that show. Monday is open lines again and readings. And my guest co-host is Sue Schumacher. And we'll be on at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Tuesday, April 17th, Rose Fullhorse, Fiona Millar, and Vivian Aubin on the Power of Three show. Your questions and comments on death and dying. This is their new monthly episode they do on the third Tuesday of the month. And they'll be discussing death and dying, and you can call in with your comments. You can call in with questions. They're not doing readings on this particular episode, the third Tuesday of the month. It's just about death and dying. And then I'll be back on Wednesday, April 18th, with Mary Brown talking about timing in the tarot. So that's all the cool stuff coming up on Psyche Talk. And what do you think, Janet? You ready to go to the phone call, see who's out there?
Sure.
Take a few calls. I need to grab my tarot deck. It's always good to have your tarot deck, you know. Just saying.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Who's been waiting the longest? A long, long time. Thanks for holding on. Let's see. 865. Area code 865. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Lynn, and I'm calling from California. Thank you for taking my call. Hi. Hi, thank you. I'd like to know what you may feel or see for me. For a long-term, good love relationship, anything about the person, maybe coming up within, weeks or months or anything at all that you might pick up.
Awesome. So you're not currently in a relationship then, you're saying?
Right. Yeah, I'm not at all. No, not just
okay. Trying. So we'll see what comes up here.
Okay.
Now, right off the bat, there's somebody showing up, and this could happen really quickly, because I'm getting the Eight of Wands. Fast stuff happening. You know, you're about to go through kind of a transition is about to happen, and hold on, I'm just trying to get this here. So the person coming through, it's the earth element. I wouldn't be surprised if this person was a Taurus or a Virgo or a Capricorn. Doesn't have to be, but, you know, that very earthy energy. This person is diligent, meticulous, studious, has a real eagerness for knowledge and learning, and let's see, trying to see about the timing here. Okay, so I'm getting 7. So within the next 7 weeks, 7 days to 7 weeks, this can happen. But there's a transition that you're going to go through before that. So we've got the Eight of Wands with this happening quickly, but there's the Tower card and then the Death card. So the Tower card could be a lot of different things, but in this particular case, my feeling is a shift in your foundations. How you specifically look at relationships and letting go of some previous ideas about that, and those might have been holding you back. So it's actually a good thing. So, you know, letting go of some beliefs that are holding you back, things that aren't serving you anymore. And then that causes a transition to happen, a new phase or cycle, and then you'll break free and be able to attract in this individual that's showing up in the cards. But let's see if Janet's getting something different or what she's getting. How about
actually,
you, Janet?
I took half the deck and I just felt to like kind of peek to see, and got the eight material, which is an earth card. So, yeah, to echo everything you said about the earth energy and the work aspect and dependability. And so when you said, it's interesting how you said Ace of Wands, Tower, and Death, I immediately got the image of like an ambulance driver. And I wouldn't be surprised if the person works in some kind of field where they're a first responder, like a firefighter, an ambulance driver, a paramedic, emergency room doctor perhaps, somebody who's very hands-on, and who's, or maybe even a mortician and a funeral director, you know, somebody who...
Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody whose work involves cleanup after destruction, or perhaps helping people in an emergency type setting, or maybe you'll meet someone like that. You know, God forbid, if hopefully your roof doesn't cave in and your rescuer becomes your soulmate. But but to echo, yeah, you know, there, I keep hearing work, you know, with that eight materials. So something, you know, involving the very earthy, tangible work realm.
Yeah, and she might actually meet this person or have already met this person, you know, through her work.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that helps you
maybe out,
Lynn. We got to go and take another call, but you're going to have to call us back and let us know what happens in the next several weeks. I'll be curious to know. And we're going to go over to area code. We're going to go to 646, area code 646. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello, my name is Elise. I'm calling from New York City.
Okay, your line's a little bit muffled. Can you get really close to the mic and say your name again?
Can you hear me better now?
That's a lot better.
Hello?
Yeah, what's your name, hon?
Thank you. Okay, my name is Lisa, and I'm calling from New York City.
Awesome, Lisa.
Hello.
What would you like to chat about?
Ooh, let's chat about tag. I think everything in my life is going well. I'm single right now, and I just wanted to see, let me just say, for the next 6 months, I'm just going to be focusing on myself, and I just wanted to see if I'll be meeting someone at the end of this year or sometime next year in 2019.
Okay. Janet, I'll let you go first.
Well, I drew five energy, which is like the Five of Wands card, and so I think that the dust needs to settle. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Yeah, there was a lot of flux, a lot of energy, cross purposes, and just things hitting the fan. And some of it may just be like minor inconveniences, misunderstandings, clashes of will, what have you. But, you know, I sense that working on yourself is a really great thing right now. And to kind of like untangle those threads that have surrounded you and surrounded your emotions. And as you focus more on yourself and meditation and get grounded, those threads will become even more apparent, and then you can follow them all the way to the root, disentangle them, cut them away, and then work on another thread and another thread. And you'll find that you'll see more clearly after this process. So it's funny that you said 6 months, because five, I'm hearing like 5 months. So you're well on your way. So just keep... Yeah,
there you go.
Focusing on yourself, untangling and unraveling those thoughts and reactions and experiences you had that tangled you up. And, you know, the more you do that, does that make sense to you?
It makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Okay. What are you getting, Dax?
So, you know, Lisa, you mentioned about a year of working on yourself, and I think that is really, really good. If I had more time, I would do your numerology with you, because I'm really curious, you know, where you are in the cycle and so forth like that. But I'm getting the World card and the Magician card together, and the Magician card is the One card, you know, self. And that's really, you know, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing right now. You shouldn't be in You shouldn't be in the entanglement of a relationship at this point at all. You need to be working on yourself. Certain opportunities are going to arise because of this focus on yourself.
Yes.
And the Magician, the magician card tells you that, you know, you have all the power. You have all the power.
Mm-hmm.
And I see in the cards you're making slow progress. There's some things that are holding you back. They seem to be based around attachments to some things from the past, and as soon as you let go of that, you're going to be able to move forward. Now, in the near future, somewhere in the next few months, some opportunities are going to show up, and your initial reaction is going to be hesitation. And when that happens, remember, oh, Dax and Janet told me about this. Okay, so remember this conversation. I'm implanting that right now into your subconscious mind that when some opportunities arise, what you're going to do is you're going to take a leap of faith and you're just going to go for it. And what that's going to happen is things are going to break loose and you're going to be able to do some new things and make real great progress. And then when 2019 rolls around, it's the perfect time, you know, for relationship and looking into things like that. It might not even have to wait all the way to 2019. It may be just that you need to get through this point. And, you know, Janet was seeing the five months. And so between 6 months and the end of the year is then when you can start breaking free and going towards the relationship. And, you know, the Magician card, it says that it's all in your hands. So how quickly or how slowly you manifest that next chapter with a new relationship in your life is entirely up to you. So I hope that helped you out, Lisa. We're going to jump to the next caller. We still got a few minutes left, Janet, so we'll see if we can squeeze some in real quick here. Hello, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? You're live on Psyche Talk. Hello. Yes, it's you.
Hi.
What's your name?
Hi, sir.
Yes, go ahead. What's your name?
Oh, hi. I know I spoke with you last Friday. Veronica.
Veronica? Okay. I know who you are. What's going on, Veronica?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for taking my call. I can try listening to all the time in my lunch break or whatever I had. It's just an awesome show. And also teaches. So teach me something today. But I have a question. My partner, for quite a bit of years now, he went to work pretty far, but he hasn't been very responsive to me. And that's the first time in all these years.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, he starts with the letter B-R-E-N. What's going on with him?
I think you asked the same question on a previous show.
What's it about that one?
I don't know. It sounds really familiar to me, you know, but we could certainly take a look. So you're wondering, you know, is he still thinking about you, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, and what? I'm sorry.
When is he going to come back to himself? You know, because I know there's no electricity over there, but this is the first time in all these years.
Yeah. I mean, he's really busy. He's really busy. You know, I'm seeing, multiple nines here, you know. So, I mean, something can happen really quickly. You know, you might hear something within 9 days, 9 weeks. You know, I know that sounds long, but it really isn't. You know, he's in a particular situation where he's kind of at a crossroads and there's a delay. And, you know, you really have – I know it's hard, but you kind of have to not take it personally, okay, and be willing to assert your own independence in the situation. Got a lot of cards about independence, actually, coming up here. And, you know, so I think if you work on your own thing and work on yourself, kind of like the previous caller, I mean, she's dead on, you know, with what she's doing. And – you know, the time will go by so quickly that when you do reconnect, you know, you won't even notice because you've taken the time to work on yourself and get your head out of worrying about the situation, what he's thinking, you know, why he's not communicating as much as he used to. You know, that's all on him, you know, and you need to be the best person you can be. So you should work on yourself and your own personal growth That way, when you do reconnect, you're going to be at a much better place. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes. I didn't think about that, but I understand. You're right about that.
Yeah, you know, it's like a hermit moment from the tarot. I'm not getting the hermit card, but I'm just saying that, you know, like the hermit, you know, taking a step back from everything, it's not always a bad thing. You know, it's allowing us time to grow as an individual, and a lot of the cards that are coming up is about personal and individual growth. Let's see what Janet's getting. Janet, any thoughts on this?
I got 10 material, and I think on his behalf that there are some extended family concerns or interactions that he's attending to, or some kind of influence of either a family business or extended family or family, and he's focused more on that rather than you right now. He just has other relationship irons in the fire, possibly related to work or family business or things like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what he's focused on. That's why he's just, his energy and intention is scattered right now. He has quite a bit on his plate, and it's taken up his mental bandwidth, and that's why.
That's exactly what I was getting. Well, I hope that helps you out, Veronica. You have to let us know how you get on. Call in any time.
Okay,
we'd love to chat with you. Bye-bye. We have time maybe for one more call here. And if we don't get to your call today, remember, 7 days a week, you can call in here on Psychic Talk, 714-816-4628. And on the day of the broadcast, you know, we have a broadcast every day. So each day, you can just open a tab in your browser, type in psychictalk.net/live. And it's going to take you right to the show page for that day. There's a player on there where you can listen to the show, the show time, so you know when to listen in, a link to the Facebook chat group so you can chat with us on Facebook. And if you want to Skype in for free, there's the call-in number, but there's also a link where you can go over and Skype in as well. So that's
Zach,
all at Psychic Talk.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Before we take a call, I was wondering if I can just quote one more thing from this video and get your take on it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was going to go back to that, actually, after this call.
Oh, were you? Okay, well, let's take the call and go back to it then. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I want to go back to that and also talk a minute or two with you about Naked Tarot. So, Yeah, so just write down that URL, folks, because that's all you need. psychictalk.net/live. And that'll always take you to the next show. Write down the phone number and go over to the website and explore. You'll find all of our hosts right there on the front page, including Janet, with a link to her and all about her. And you can get in contact with Janet. So we're going to take this one call real quick here, 775. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Wendy from Sacramento.
Hi, Wendy. What do you want to chat about?
Hello, you all. I talked to you briefly before, and your other guest that day. I'm the lady that was in a rear-end collision in a yellow cab on March 9th. And
yeah.
I followed all my employer's instructions about calling Cigna and getting a case and everything, and I signed release of my paperwork, my HIPAA information, and I got an email yesterday from HR stating, you need to contact me or we will consider that you have abandoned your job, which made me sick to read that. And I sent her three letters off work from my provider, consecutive, that'll show me off, and that I'm not released until the middle of June if they cannot fulfill the accommodations that my doctor says. And so she called me, the HR lady called me today, and she said, okay, you're good. Sorry for that, the letter that we sent you. And I said, no worries. And then she sent me another email, and she said, so you forwarded this documentation, she was meaning the off-work letters, to the, she sent me a link for FMLA, and she said to Cigna. And I said, well, my manager has it. And also this other lady from Vocational has it. So I sent her an email just now stating, are we good? And do you still want me to forward this information? I can't do FMLA because we've only been there 9 months, but this is an ADA situation. So under ADA, it'll protect my job. And I can't do my job because I can't sit in front of a computer for 30 minutes. So is everything going to be okay still?
Yeah, what's your question for us, though?
My question is, am I okay? Will this officially be okay? I thought everything was fine, but she just was revisiting this. So am I okay? Am I good? Because I'm responding to her saying, yes, I did send this to my case manager at Cigna. So am I okay? Am I going to keep my job?
Okay. I got something on that, but I'm going to recuse myself a little bit because I've already talked to you about this and gave an answer. And I'll tell you what I'm seeing, but I want to go to Janet first and just see if she's picking up on anything or if she's getting a yes or no.
I got the commitment card, which is the equivalent of the lovers. And it basically, I feel it's saying that just make sure all your paperwork is in. And if you're truly concerned, put the emails and any kind of documentation in the form of a registered letter, something that they have to sign for. And just make sure you have every documentation that you need and resend it to her via whoever needs it in the form of a registered letter. And then that way, that is proof that they got it and proof that you did what you needed to do. And you can include all your a Xerox version of all your documents, everything that you required and everything. So the commitment card is about legalities and contracts and decisions and what have you. And so as long as you've done everything that has been recommended to you, but if you want a more feeling of emotional assurance that you've done all you can, then perhaps, because email's not exactly reliable, and I would send all that, copy it and put it in the form of a register letter, and then you know that you've done everything you possibly can and you've covered all the bases and you've dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's. Does that make sense?
See, that makes perfect sense. That's why I went to you, Janet, because it makes absolutely perfect sense. I knew you'd have a gem, for her, and I'll just give what I got real quickly. I did a yes-no spread. I got 4 out of 5 yes cards, including 2 major arcana cards, temperance and the death card. And the death card is talking about a transition. You're coming out of this. You're going to come out of this, Wendy, and it looks really, really good. But, dot all the I's, cross all the T's, do what Janet said. That's fantastic advice, and I hope that helped you out, and we'll hopefully talk to you on a future show here on Psychic Talk. Janet, we're at the end of the show. I can't believe we had so much fun, but, I want to go into a couple of things, before we sign off, folks. First of all, what was one of the points? You said there was one last point from this you wanted to bring up.
This was a direct quote from the YouTuber, and I just want your thoughts on this. I want to see more people use tarot, but it doesn't have to become mainstream to achieve that. With enough proper advertising and marketing in our domain under our control, we can keep tarot growing and evolving without selling its soul by becoming mainstream. I just want to know what your thoughts on that is.
Oh, my God. I don't even know how to respond to that. I go back to one of my original.
What the hell does that mean?
What does that mean? And he's saying don't get it in the hands of the masses, but get it into the hands of the masses. I'm so confused at this point. I want to go back to one of my original statements, was that it's already in the hands of the masses. It's evolving. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
You can't close the barn door after the horses have gotten out.
Exactly.
And I just don't understand what that means, advertising and marketing in our domain under our control. Who is our? Who? who is he speaking about? And it's like so fascist, you know. And I think to myself, what's it to you if tarot becomes more accessible? You know, if you're invested in the Rider-Waite-Smith and esoterica, judging from, you know, his comments, and what you think is the true tarot, then keep using it. You know, it will either stand the test of time or it won't. But, what, you know, I'm thinking, what's it to you if, you know, tarot branches out and more people get exposed and they add their things to it and it becomes this empowering tool? What's it to you, you know?
Exactly, anyway. You know. And the thing is about, you know, we, you know, that whole who are they. But if anybody's been in the tarot community for any length of time, you know it's like herding cats. And there's never going to be a centralization. There's never going to be like the American Medical Association, you know, disseminating the rules and everything like that. I mean, yeah, the people at the AMA and the American Dental Association and the bar and everything, you know, they all have huge egos too, but you've not met an ego till you've met a tarot person. And
oh my God.
We've been doing this long enough that we know that there's never going to be an accepted way. There's never going to be a centralization. So it cannot happen. But the two points I want to leave is, one, what I just said, it's already in the hands of the masses. If you want to make it better, well, then put out material that helps new people and points them in the right direction. You know, the other thing I wanted to mention is, if you want to make it proprietary in some way, if you want to get some sort of control over, you know, at least your little piece of the world, how about being innovative? How about creating something new?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
exactly. So and that takes energy, time, creativity, and intelligence. And well,
yeah. Instead of resting your laurels on you know these ancient concepts, many of which have been proven false, but even the ones that, you know, I actually see within the tarot, you know, as far as esoteric teachings and thoughts and things along those lines, you know, instead of regurgitating that and trying to, you know, wrangle it somehow where you get, you know, proprietary control of some sort, how about going in the other direction? How about creating a deck or a new type of deck or a new way of reading or a new way of using the tarot or looking at the tarot? Then you can create a course around that. You can create a limited, at least, amount of proprietary where, you know, you have a control and you can disseminate your information, your way of looking at it, and you've created something new and valuable for the tarot community. How about doing that instead of trying to go backwards?
You know, it's much better to just try to preserve the, quote, old ways, you know, because that takes no energy. You know, that takes a little...
Yeah, and I just want to say a lot of the people that espouse this point of view, and you know, often they'll write books and stuff like that, and you read it and they're just regurgitating the same stuff over and over and over and over again, you know. And and hey, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm really big on symbolism. I started with Waite-Smith. My mind thinks in Waite-Smith, and so therefore I teach using numerology and Waite-Smith. I'm sorry, that's how my subconscious, you know, tarot is like a foreign language that you're learning, and you're embedding the ideas from the symbolism into your subconscious mind. And there's no right or wrong. It's how, you know, it's what it means to you, not, you know, some other tarot person. Okay. And I use Waite-Smith, and I love the symbolism, and I understand it. And so it makes it easier for me to teach it that way. But I'm not against the fact that there are so many artists coming out with new images and symbolisms, new ways of expressing certain ideas, which is what the tarot is. It's, you know, 78 ideas, each one is on a spectrum. And by the way, Janet's going to be joining me the week after next. We're going to talk about tarot reversals and how to get the most out of using tarot reversals, and a little bit about what if you don't use tarot reversals? And that's where the spectrum of card meaning within each card comes in. And we'll be talking about that in a couple of weeks. But just wanted to throw that out there, a little teaser there, Janet, you know. But there's a lot of ways to expand. And see, that's what really happens when things get in the hands of the masses. Yes, certain things get dumbed down in certain areas and things. I understand that, you know, don't get me wrong. I always look at both sides of the coin. I see good points from both sides in all issues. You know, I can see where people are coming from. I'm kind of cursed with this. And but the thing is that the other thing is when proprietary knowledge gets into the hands of the masses, things expand and become better. Look at how software was extremely proprietary and then has over the years become very open source. And out of open source, we have gotten fantastic platforms. For instance, I'll give you an example is WordPress. Before the WordPress platform, all websites were built on proprietary software, and you had to learn that code, and it was very difficult to create websites. Then some engineers got together, they took code, they constructed this WordPress platform and put it out onto the internet 100% free, 100% open source, meaning everybody could see the code, everybody could then work on the code, alter the code, build up the code, make it better. And now we've got this platform that an enormous percentage of the websites that are currently on the net are built on the basis of the WordPress infrastructure, let's say, which leads us full circle back to how you started the conversation, Janet, with the tarot being an infrastructure, a structure
right.
that, like you, the way I love that analogy of, you know, you're putting clay on it and making it something.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It
and that's what we need.
If somebody were to ask, what is tarot? You know, really, the bare bones of it is the 22 majors, the minor arcana, and the core cards, a pack of 78 cards that deal with the four everyday realms of life and the 22 archetypes that everybody recognizes that touch us all. Basically, that's it. So, you know, there is no holy tarot. It's basically just a pack of bones, you know, and you could say that, you know, one result, the Aryan race, perhaps, blonde hair, blue eyes, is the best, or, you know, or your version, but it doesn't make it so. As long as the bones are solid, you know, and, you know, you put the clay on it, you put the stuff on it. And you're right, you know, it's like I use that analogy with my original podcast, the part one, where I talked about, you know, gold versus, you know, 24 karat gold is pure, but it's very soft and dentable, and it's not wearable. So you add a little bit of metal to it, some alloys, and you make it stronger. You know, then you have your, you know, your 14 karat gold, your 20 karat, your, you know, 10 karat, whatever. But it looks just the same. It looks as good. It holds up better. You know, it holds up better because it has stronger materials in it. You know, and I just feel like tarot is the same way. It's like Joseph Gordon-Levitt has this brilliant project called Hit Record, and he crowdsources and pays people to contribute to these really cool productions, and he'll sometimes have a call out for writers, animators, illustrators, singers, voice actors, what have you, comedians, and they, you know, people submit their stuff, they you know, remake it, they do their own spin on it and what have you, and if it's used in what, you know, he'll actually write out a check to you. And I think it makes creativity stronger when we do that, you know, when we bring our own talents and disciplines and strengths to it, and it makes for a stronger system, but it also makes one that can reach more people wherever they're at and hopefully help humanity to awaken to be more compassionate, understanding, self-aware, and critical thinking.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to invite people to go take a look at my course, Tarot by the Numbers. You can read the outline over at tarotguild.org. That's tarotguild.org/learn. Or if you're on tarotguild.org, just click the Learn button at the top of any page and read about the course. And the comments I get from people that take the course, even people that have been doing tarot for 20 years, Janet, they see what I've added. They explore numerology and sacred geometry, and when they do, a light bulb goes off, and they get it. They see the infrastructure. They understand why tarot is so universal and so powerful. You know, why is it structured the way it's structured? Well, it's numerological, elemental, and based on certain parts of sacred geometry. And once you get that, that's when the light bulb goes off, and that's why it's enduring like it is. There's 78 cards in the deck. Why is there 78 cards? Why is there not 87? Why is there not 44? Well, it's simple. It takes 78 lines to form Metatron's cube in sacred geometry, and Metatron's cube is the geometrical structure out of which all other geometrical structures arise, including the five Platonic solids. And there's one for each of the elements. So earth, fire, air, water from the minor arcana. And then the fifth or quintessential element, spirit, which is the major arcana. And that's why there's 78 cards, folks, you know, and that's why I'm kind of an old-fashioned stickler about it's not a tarot deck unless it has 78 cards. We talked about that on a recent show.
That's one thing I am dogmatic about, and it's the only thing I'm dogmatic about. It has to have 78 cards. Tarot has to have 78 cards. Anything else, you know, it's, you know.
I mean, if they add something that adds to it that's separate from the deck, you know, if you have a 78 card deck, and let's say they throw in four other cards that are a separate significator system like you've done with the Snowland Tarot. You know, that's
and
an innovation.
We did that with the coffee deck, too. We have four elemental significators in there. Like the earth shows vines, fire shows like a blazing fire, clouds for air, and an ocean like for water. And those are happen to be also the backgrounds of our court cards.
Yeah, and the other thing is that you still have a 78 card tarot deck in there, and it doesn't matter. You know, this is just something extra that you can work with, as opposed to somebody coming out with a 55 card deck and they say this is a tarot deck. Well, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mind that, but just call it what it is. Call a spade a spade. It is a Oracle deck, folks. That's an Oracle deck. It's not a tarot deck, you know.
Right.
And before we sign off, you know, I wouldn't want to end the show without, you know, mentioning Naked Tarot. Of course, your fabulous podcast. You know, people can check out all the great podcasts you've done already, including even interviews and all. Go check it out. PsychicTalk.net/Naked Tarot. You're going to find all of her podcasts. But also your book coming up in September, and I was, lucky enough to get an advanced copy. And, you know, one of the things I noticed in there, you were talking originally in our original conversation about should tarot be in the hands of the masses, talking about a lot of the books that, you know, kept coming out and still keep coming out. Based on the way Smith and regurgitation and, you know, old Victorian or even prior concepts and ideas.
Medieval.
Yeah, and what I love about Naked Tarot is, you know, the contemporary ideas, the contemporary connections, contemporary meanings, the association to a lot of pop culture, you know, especially, of course, for me being a big Star Wars fan, you know, Star Wars and the Lord of the Rings and things like that. Do you want to tell folks a little bit about that and what they can expect from your book, Naked Tarot, when it comes out?
Wow. Well, I will say it is unlike any tarot book that's ever been published. I will say that. Each chapter has a stripped-down overview. Then I have keywords. Then I have personification and embodiments. I have a quote. I have the challenge of the card, the gift of the card. I have a list of occupations and vocations. I have a Disney totem that I have picked for every card. For example, the Four of Swords, it's Princess Aurora or Sleeping Beauty. I have an animal symbol. I have flower essences, both Bach and Australian Bush. I have a crystal stone associated with every card and why. Not just, you know, a stone, but I actually explain why. Aromatherapy. I have body parts and systems and health issues associated with every card. A mystical messenger. A Sabian symbol, a writing prompt, an affirmation, and then I break it down to how this card associates with career, how does it associate with romance, and then how does it associate with parenting. No other tarot author has associated tarot with parenting, and so I'm giving a huge paragraph of parenting advice through the lens of every card. And I might even write a tarot book on parenting, but for now we'll have that. Then I have a section on spirituality. Then I have a list of recommended resources that connect to the card. And sometimes they are paintings, they're books, it might be a movie, a song, a fairy tale, something that connects to the card in pop culture that seems to embody it. And then I actually have created an original spread for every single card. So there's actually 78 spreads through here. So like the Four of Swords I have, it's called a pause button spread, and it's a 7-card spread. And they're usually anywhere from 5 to 10 cards. I mean, they're big spreads. But I think what I'm most proud of and which was the most difficult to write was the court cards. I give the court cards their final due. In fact, I put them at the beginning of the book. And in addition to all those things that I had mentioned that is going to go with every card, I also associate other things like Myers-Briggs and Kersey. I not only just say, like, let's say with the Knight of Swords, ESTP, I have my own name for it, the Deviant, and I explain what the beneficial traits are, the detrimental traits. I'm sorry, Knight of Swords. Yeah, I think that's what I said. But I also associate the core cards with StrengthsFinders 2.0, the Cattell's 16PF, the Enneagram, ANSWER, a new style in relating or new standard relating personality system. Of course, like I said, Myers-Briggs and Kersey. And so I associate other things, you know, with those 16 court cards to expand it even more. So it's kind of like three books in one. It's a book of correspondences. It's a down and dirty overview, nitty gritty of how the tarot card relates to our life. But also, you know, there's spreads for every card, and I do drop F-bombs in here. I love it that, you know, my publisher out of the UK was really okay with that. There's a lot of pop culture stuff through there. Like the Knight of Wands, you know, I call broken but not defeated, you know, and then I'll talk about like Plants versus Zombies or the Dr. Zomboss. And, you know, so geeks will be able to geek out through here, but there's also a lot of stuff from literature and the arts and music. And so it's, you know, it's very intelligent, I feel, but it's very stripped down and relevant. So, you know, I'm really excited. I'm proud of this. Ron calls this book my magnum opus, and I really can't see myself. I mean, I'm under contract for another book, 365 Tarot, Spreads, Insights, and Lookalikes. And so I'm going to be writing that next. But I really can't see any book really outshining. I mean, this is just, I'm so proud of it. I spent years writing this. I mean, I signed contract on this back in 2013, and it took me years to write. Oh my God, the court cards themselves were—it's just excruciating. The amount of research and thought, and me just marshaling all my knowledge and resources from other disciplines, and studying—you know—the aromatherapy, studying the flower essence, studying animal totems and animal behavior from like science books to pick the animal that best, you know, sums up, you know, creating an original spread for each. So, I'm just super, super proud of it. I really am. And I think people will love it. It's a nice thick book. It's over 450 pages. And I can't wait. And it's supposed to come out end of September, but I'm noticing on Amazon it says September 8th. So if anybody wants to see a sample chapter or learn more about it, you can go to nakedtarot.com. I even have a countdown on there. I'm so excited there's a countdown, how many days, hours, and minutes. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder there, because I remember on a previous interview a while back, and we were talking to you about Naked Tarot, and I called it your magnus opus as well.
Yeah.
I can't imagine another tarot book coming out that could, you know, ever hold a candle to this and actually, you know, get anywhere close. I mean, sure, some books have put in some very fascinating things, you know, maybe, you know, an element or two that you're including, you know, but it's like an encyclopedia, you know, no one has put all of this in to a tarot book before. It's,
yeah,
you know, the amount of effort is just staggering to me.
Thank you. Well, you know, one of the advice to beginning writers that you often come across is write the book that you've always wanted to see. If you don't see the book that you want to read on the shelf, write it. And I did. And that's and it was exhausting. And I just hope people, you know, love it as much as I do. I mean, I get a kick out of it. And I really believe angels and helpers helped me, as well as some people who passed on the other side. Ganesh really helped. And also the founder of Answer, who passed away, ANSIR, who created this personality system, but then she succumbed to breast cancer. She was a good friend of mine, and I felt her help with the court cards, and so I'm just grateful that I had a team of spiritual support to help me do this as well, and of course the encouragement of Ron and Noah. I mean, Ron and Noah just have been so supportive. You know, you can do this, Mom, and you can do this, Hun, and they're just wonderful. I could not be luckier to have such a wonderful husband and son. And of course, friends like you, you know, that have stood with me for years and are always excited when I come out with something new. And, you know, I appreciate that friendship too. You know, it, when the going gets rough, because sometimes writing is a very solitary thing, it's always nice, you know, when friends and family just rally support and say, you can do this, I can't wait for this, or how's it going? And so I appreciate that, and I appreciate your friendship, Dax.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome, because this is how, you know, kind of reeling it back into the, it fits right into the whole conversation today. You know, this is how tarot grows and expands. And that's why I'm always excited when you come out with new stuff. There's been an author or two that have kind of broached the subject in a book or two here and there, trying to, you know, bring tarot into the contemporary and have contemporary associations, you know, nothing like Naked Tarot, but I think that, you know, even though you've pretty much, you know, almost cornered the market on it, where it's all in there, but I would like to see other people come out with new innovative approaches. I'd like to see more books that show contemporary meanings and associations, you know, so that tarot really can get into the hands of the masses more and more people can use tarot on their own.
Right. Yeah, I think tarot only benefits from, you know, people bringing their disciplines and interests and passions to it. I mean, that's why we made the coffee tarot. And, you know, I heard one snarky comment, oh, this is just a shtick deck. And I'm thinking, well, you haven't looked very close, have you? because, yeah, coffee seems kind of mainstream and pop culture. But, you know, the amount of thought that Ron and I put in every image is extraordinary. You know, we don't just pull it out of our ass. You know, we talk about, okay, what are some of the most, you know, popular meanings of this card? You know, and we look into history, and we look into intuitively what we've associated with. And then we ask ourselves, okay, now, how do we place this in the backdrop of coffee? Whether it's growing coffee, roasting coffee, serving coffee, drinking coffee, how could we portray this? And, you know, for example, like the Six of Cups card, or Six of Water, as we call it, you know, it's often called the nostalgia card, or the blast from the past, or, you know, memories. So what we did is we show a grandfather holding a grandson pointing at a World's Fair poster where this old-fashioned man with a curly mustache, and he was presenting like a new type of coffee, you know, coffee maker and what have you. And he was basically, you know, recalling his memories of how he, you know, created this coffee machine at this World's Fair, and he was sharing that memory with the grandson. You know, so a lot of thoughts go into that, but if somebody were just to look at the images, they would still have a lot to pull from that. What does it mean, a poster from the World's Fair? What does it mean that a grand, you know, an older man is holding a son and who's pointing to that? You know, there's still enough visual symbols that, you know, even if you don't know the background, you would be able to do an intuitive reading. And I'm actually right now, I don't know if you know this, I am writing the Coffee Tarot Companion book. I am halfway through
it. I knew that, yes.
Yeah, and it's going to be just as big. We're bigger than Back in Time Tarot. I'm already at like over 40,000 words. And so I'm working on that on top of doing the podcast and things like, you know, and my Patreon, you know, patrons and doing that, doing readings, what have you. I'm writing the companion book, and it's going to be a thick companion book. And it's going to talk about the coffee tarot. It's going to talk about every, you know, every image, provide keywords. You know, there's five affirmations, five writing prompts for each, five intuitive questions to ask yourself. I'm going to have spreads in that, in, you know, that book. And I also, you know, talk about the romance, the career, and the spirituality departments. So this is going to be, you know, another big book, too. And I'm self-publishing this one. My friend Craig Conley is doing the formatting for me, and he's really brilliant. And so I'm going to do that, and I'm updating the Snowland Companion. The Snowland Companion book, up until now, has only been digital. So I'm going to add some new stuff to that, and I'm going to make that a print book. So that's after I write the Coffee Tarot Companion. So I'm still busy writing things, you know, and I'm under contract, like I said, for the 365 Tarot that I'm going to be working on as well. I signed that contract just a month or two after Naked Tarot, so that's been, you know, since 2013. So I want to try to get that done by the end of summer. So 2018 is a big year, a very big year for me.
And, you know, we were talking about innovation, and that's what I like about the Coffee Tarot is, you know, it lends itself to tarot getting in the hands of people that it wouldn't normally get into, because they're like myself, you know, huge coffee aficionado. I always wanted there to be a coffee tarot, and now there is, you know, but it's not a novelty deck. It's not a novelty deck. There's so much depth to it that you get the best of both worlds. You get the attraction to the masses combined with deep symbolism and understanding. And so it's really a powerful tarot, but at the same time has this draw. And that's
Well, here's one example of that. I had some guy who has a roasting company here in Pennsylvania, and I think it's called Tarot Bean Roasting Company, which is funny. I'm not sure why he called it tarot. I have to ask him this. But he became interested, and he followed some of my posts, and then when Kickstarter came, he backed it. And so when he got the deck, he loved it, and he keeps it out there at the roastery cafe that he owns, and people will just come and look at it, and they're like, oh, this is so great. And so there you are. You know, it's being exposed to the masses. But how deep one wants to go is going to be up to them, you know. But at least they've become intrigued. At least, you know, they are becoming familiar with these universal archetypes and symbols, but in a contemporary manner so that they can go ahead and investigate further. But see, that's not possible, you know, unless you take the tarot archetypes and you transform them into something that is relatable and contemporary.
Yes, and I don't know if many people know it, maybe my longtime listeners, but I used to own and run coffee houses and other coffee-related businesses. And I would love and have always had this dream of retiring, although it's not really retiring, but opening a coffee house again and, you know, have it themed with the tarot. So it'd be like Tarot Cafe or Tarot Coffee House.
Right.
And then, you know, all the pictures on the walls would be from various tarot decks, you know, the beautiful imagery done as prints.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tables would have tarot cards side by side by side and then laminated into the tabletops. And then the other cool thing is, you know, now I get to put the coffee tarot out on some of the tables. You know?
That sounds awesome. And then you can franchise it, and then I can open up one here. I always tell Ron that my dream is to actually have a cafe / New Age bookstore tarot-themed thing, too. And he goes, do you really want that? Think about that. And I'm like, I don't know. It seems like I want it. And he goes, I don't know. He said, you like the idea of it. And he might be right. I don't like the business aspect. So maybe you need to do that, Dax. And then you could turn to a franchise, and then I'll open up the Pennsylvania version.
There you go.
That sounds delicious. It sounds so delicious. And Ron wants to start getting into Ron wants to start getting into chocolate making. So I'm like, because he's a kick-ass baker. I mean, this guy could do just about anything.
And that's
and I'm like, oh my
that's
God,
a natural
we
compliment.
Can open, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, oh, we can open up a chocolate, you know, store or what. And he goes, I don't know, you know. And so who knows? Who knows what the future holds?
Chocolate store, coffee house, you know. And with populated by, you know, tarot readers hanging out and doing readings for people.
Exactly. Oh, doesn't that sound
my God.
Awesome?
That's
so exciting just to think about. My mouth's watering like I'm imagining dill pickles or something. Yum, yum, yum.
Absolutely. Go over to psychictalk.net/Janet, and you can read about Janet, get a hold of Janet, links to her website, links to all the different decks and books and everything like that. In fact, there's more I've got to add now, so it's going to – I don't know. I got work to do. But great show.
Or you could just
great
go to
show,
janetboyer.com.
That's true, too. Yep, yep. Okay, so great show, and I'm going to be talking with you in a couple weeks back here on Tarot Insight.
Yeah, thank
reversals.
You, everybody, for joining us.
Because, by the way, Janet wrote the book on that, too.
Yeah, Tarot in Reverse.
Tarot in Reverse. So we'll be talking about that book and reversals and just really get into the whole thing. Join me next week, folks. When Mary Brown and I are going to talk about timing in tarot, all the different ways and manners and fun stuff about that, you know, we'll be taking your calls. And if we didn't get to your call today, be sure to call in tomorrow on the Soul Sisters Show. PsychicTalk.net/live. See you tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Bye, Janet.
Bye-bye.